Today on Family Talk.
Today on Family Talk, Dr. James Dobson and Dr. Meg Meeker break down the fundamentals of child discipline. This is an excellent program, one that will equip you to discipline your child so that they grow up to become successful adults. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Ryan Dobson, and today we're going to continue a program that is quite unique. A few weeks ago, child experts Dr. James Dobson and Dr. Meg Meeker went into the studio and recorded several programs on how to effectively raise your children. Today we'll hear the conclusion of that program on how to discipline your children so they grow up to be successful adults. But before we get to that conversation, let me share with you an exciting opportunity. Family Talk is doing something unique. Right now, through the end of the month, any donation we receive, we're going to send you something very special. One is my dad's book, Love for a Lifetime, and also with it, the DVD from our Building a Family Legacy film series that goes with that book. It's an amazing resource, one that will help your marriage or any marriage you can think of. Donate online today at drjamesdobson.org or call us 877-732-6825. Let's get to the program now. Here's my dad and Dr. Meg Meeker on today's edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Dr. Dobson, yesterday we were talking about the difficulties that teachers face, and my heart goes out to teachers across the country because of the lack of authority, the authority that's taken away from them, particularly in the public schools. And you were talking about how important it is that every person, regardless of your age, but particularly children, know they have a leader. You also mentioned a scenario I wanted to go back to yesterday, and that was the toddler running wild in the airport, driving everybody crazy. And I would like to address that in a very specific manner, because this is what parents ask me a lot. I have a 2 or 3 or 4 year old who is out of control. I tell them to do something. They come up to me and say, no, I don't want to. And they run around and go and do the exact opposite. Can you help me? What do you do with a toddler who's out of control?
The very first thing that has to happen is inside your head as a mother or father. And what you have to realize is that you are the boss. God has put you in charge of those children. You're to take care of them. You're to teach them. You're to guide them. And you're to keep them from driving everybody else crazy. So
you have to, first of all,
realize that you have the right and the responsibility to rein those kids in. Yeah. And suppose you have a 2-year-old who's throwing a temper tantrum. He's walking hand in hand with his father, and he's screaming because he wanted some candy from the shop. Or whatever it is, but he's not nearly as upset and angry as you think he is. He is really taking on your authority.
Yes.
And you need to go right over to a chair and sit down and bring him there. And you put your hands on his little face, and you get right in his face, and you say, Jack, you're not going to act this way. Do you understand? If you do, you will regret it, because I've got a lot of ways to make you miserable. And I want you to stop crying right now. And then I would lower my hands to the shoulder muscles right here.
Yes.
You know, the trapezius muscles.
You're pointing to your shoulders, yes.
Yes. Uh-huh. And you just put a little pressure on those muscles. And he knows what that means. That means don't do this anymore. And the implication is there's a whole lot more of that coming if he doesn't straighten up. And then you bring him around and set him in a chair beside you. And you say, I don't want to see those tears anymore, or you will have something to cry about. You're big. You're strong. You can do this. You can, if necessary, intimidate that child who's trying to give you fits. Now, there are people out there that say, how cruel, how harsh, how mean. You're going to warp that little child's mind. Not if you do it the way I described it.
Yes.
You don't go slapping and whacking and screaming. Don't scream. Mm-hmm. You don't have to scream. You're in charge. Don't yell.
I love it. I think that in healthy and what you describe in that picture that you just painted for us is a parent who really is claiming their authority and is very much in charge. A lot of self-control there. And I love the way you say we should look right into our child's face, even cup their face in our hands and say, I'm the boss.
That's what it says.
Do you understand?
And when you scream, you're saying you're the boss and I don't know what to do
and
about
I'm out of control and you're scaring me.
Yeah.
And I think you're absolutely right. So many parents are afraid of their children, and children pick up on that, and then a parent starts to scream, and it makes kids feel very, very frightened. So a parent who's in control and who is living with authority really makes a child feel safe. Are you describing in that scenario what it takes to break that child's will?
You don't break it, because it's very easy to break the spirit at the same time. You shape it.
You shape their will, but you never
break it, but you shape it.
Great.
And you mentioned a child feels safe. If an individual is taken across the Royal Gorge Bridge, I don't know if you've ever been over there, but it's a long way down on both sides. None of us would want to even walk next to the edge. But we're willing to go over the bridge because those guardrails are there. If they weren't there, you wouldn't even go over and lean over or look over because that's scary. In the heyday of the progressive movement in the 1930s and early 1940s, the progressive education people thought that children felt hemmed in and oppressed by the fences that were around the playground. And so they took them all down. What they found is that when they did that, the children huddled toward the center of the playground. But if you put the fences up, they'll play all the way out there. Oh. There is security in defined limits. And you set the limits. And when you do, there's love. Often when you have a confrontation like that I described, a little child will come over and climb up in your lap and say, love, Daddy, mm-hmm. or love, Mommy.
Yes.
Because you have demonstrated that you love them. That's what love is.
You've defined a world, a safe world for them.
Meg, let me tell you something. You'll appreciate this because it deals with a pediatrician friend of mine. He had a patient who was a little boy. He must have been 5 or 6, and he was a terror. And his mother had no idea how to handle him. And when he came in for an appointment, he was all over the place. He got into the medications and to the equipment and everything. And it came time for the pediatrician to make a recommendation of this little boy to a dentist. And this is not something you would do to a friend, to send this little boy. And so he thought about it, and he remembered an older man who was a dentist, and he had a reputation for knowing how to handle kids. And he referred this little boy and his mother to this dentist. And as it turned out, he found out several weeks later, they arrived there, and the little boy would not get up in the chair. And this dentist said, oh, no, you're going to do that. And he said, no, I'm not. And he said, oh, yes, you are. And the little boy said, if you make me get up in that chair, I will take my clothes off. And the dentist said, well, son, take them off. And he began peeling. He got all the way down to his shorts. He said, son, get up in the chair. And the little boy said, if you make me get in the chair, I'll take my underwear off. And the dentist said, son, take them off. He took them off, got up in the chair, totally naked, sat there through the whole exam. And when it was all over, he got down and he said, give me my clothes. And the dentist said, no, son, I'm going to keep them till tomorrow. You're not going to have your the little boy went to the waiting room, followed by his mother, and walked through the waiting room with not a stitch on. And that was the last trouble that they had with him. And the mother said to the dentist, no one has ever been able to make him mind until you. Mm. And every other time he came, he was a perfect gentleman. He just had to find somebody tougher than he was. Now, if you do it now, it'd be a lawyer calling.
Of course. Of course. Why do parents not want to be tough enough? Why would that mother not have done something similar to the dentist?
Number one, she had no idea what to do. And second, they're scared of the child. Somehow, this child will become rebellious. And when he gets to be a teenager, I won't be able to handle him. They're afraid of the consequences of leading.
Yes.
And as a result, they run from it.
I wonder if parents are afraid, too, that if they are confrontative and they lead the child, that the child is going to distance themselves from them and go off and rebel.
That
all the time.
If
I discipline my child, they'll rebel. What do you say to parents who would say that?
I would like them to read something that I'm holding in my hand.
Great.
And it's in The Strong-Willed Child. Have you ever heard of Susanna Wesley?
Yes.
Susanna Wesley was an 18th century mother of the evangelist John and Charles Wesley. And those parents reportedly bore 19 children. Mm. And toward the end of her life, John asked her to describe in writing her philosophy of mothering for him. And copies of what she wrote to her son, who was then grown, still exists today. And I have a copy of it here.
I'd love to hear it.
This mother, raising 19 kids, she knew something about kids.
Yes.
This is what she said. And it's written in the formal language of an 18th century mom.
Yes.
In order to form the minds of children, the first thing to be done is to conquer the will and to bring them into obedient temper. To inform the understanding is a work of time and must, with children, proceed with slow degrees as they are able to bear it. But the subjection of the will is a thing which must be done at once, and the sooner the better. For neglecting timely correction, they will contract a stubbornness and an obstinacy which is hardly ever conquered, and never without using such severity as would be painful to me as it is to the children. In the esteem of the world, those who withhold timely correction would pass for kind and indulgent parents, whom I call cruel parents, who permit their children to get habits which they know must afterward be broken. Nay, some are so stupidly fond of, as in sport, to teach their children to do things which in the afterwhile they must severely beat them for doing. Now, that's her words.
Yeah,
that's not mine.
Our words. Yeah.
And that's the 1700s. Whenever a child is corrected, it must be conquered. And this will be no hard matter to do if it's not grown headstrong by too much indulgence. And if the will of a child is totally subdued, and if it were brought to revere and stand in awe of the parents, then a great many childish follies and inadvertencies may be passed by. Some should be overlooked and taken no notice of. That's what we've been
talking about.
And others mildly reproved. But no willful transgressions, there's the willfulness that I talked about last time, ought ever to be forgiven children without chastisement, more or less as the nature of the circumstance of the offense shall require. I cannot dismiss this subject, as self-will is the root of all sin and misery.
Self-will is the root of all sin and misery.
And we've got a very willful generation that's coming up around us. So whatever cherishes this in children ensures thereafter wretchedness and faithlessness. Whatever checks and mortifies promotes their future happiness and piety. This is still more evident if we further consider that Christianity is nothing less than doing the will of God and not our own, that the one grand impediment to our temporal and eternal happiness being this self-will. No indulgence of it can be trivial. No denial unprofitable. And she may have gone on from there, but that's what I have. Isn't that interesting?
Very interesting. And it's beautifully well written as well. And I love the picture that she paints. She's really talking about making sure that her child respects her as an authority so that he can respect God as an authority and yield to that, yeah, rather than letting his own will take him wherever he will.
Yeah. And yeah, that self-will is harmful to him.
Very harmful. But I see that with a lot of modern parents. We cherish that child's will. We've come to say it's your choice and your independent spirit is very good. And we put different names on it that sound a little bit nicer. But there's a sense I feel that modern parents feel we need to keep hands off of the child's will. And that if they let that just run, eventually the child will get to a good place. But what you're saying and what she's saying is, oh, no, no, that takes them into a very bad place.
Yeah, it's very hard for an individual to learn to control his own will. It's tyrannical. And you can help him not only yield to your will and to God's will, but to his own.
Yes.
And think of the two men we know that Susanna Wesley raised, yeah, Charles and John Wesley. Mm-hmm. You think of the impact they had on the Great Awakening. They had learned to yield to God's will.
Yes. And if a child doesn't yield to a parent's will, they will never yield to God's will. And that's ultimately our job as Christian parents, isn't it?
Yes. And now there are a lot of ways you can undermine that process of teaching to control the will. One of them is bribery. If you will do what I tell you to do, I have a sucker for you, you know, or I'll take you to the zoo or what have you. There's nothing wrong with making an offer to a child that you really are going to have fun and I will take you to the zoo. It's another thing when you realize this child is controlling you with that.
Kids, very, very young, can be very manipulative, can't they? I'm thinking, what age?
Yeah, in fact, if I can interrupt, Meg, in fact, they understand this game that's being played. They understand it better than you do.
At what age do you think a child catches on to this? What's the age where a parent should start disciplining a child or getting them to understand, I'm the boss, you're the child?
Well, you heard that Dr. Sloniger, who was the pediatrician, who told me that the sooner the better. And if you start on the second day of life, you're one day late.
I love that.
He doesn't mean disciplining. He doesn't mean spanking. He didn't mean any kind of physical response. He just meant start being in control. He said that as a pediatrician that a mother would call him and say, my son is sick. And he would say, how long has he been ill? And the mother would say, well, it started yesterday. And he would say, does he have a fever? That'd be the question you would ask.
Sure.
And this mother he's talking about would say, I don't know. And he says, why don't you know? And the mother would say, because he won't let me take the temperature. Who's in charge there?
Exactly.
You know, who's in charge? So it can start very early. Let me give you an example of it. Danae, our daughter's first encounter with her mother was when she was 9 months old. Okay, here we've got it now. How early do you start to be in charge? Shirley was sweeping a little bit of dust and trash in the kitchen, and she sweeped it over, and Danae crawled up to it to watch the process. And Shirley said, Danae, don't crawl into this. No, no. And Danae knew what that meant.
Sure.
She understood that word. And in a few minutes, she came crawling and went straight into the dirt. And Shirley picked her up and put her down about a yard away and said, no. And then they turned right around and came into it. So you have the first just outright confrontation of wills. And it happened about four times. And each time, Shirley took Danae back and put her down more forcefully and said, no, no, Danae. And finally, Shirley won the confrontation, and Danae crawled off crying. Mm-hmm. That was the first time she said, I want to. And Shirley said, don't do it. 9 months of age.
Yeah.
So that's where it begins.
Early, early. And from my experience, young children, infants, are so in tune to their parents. And they can understand what their parents want, even though a child may not be able to articulate it or respond to
they
it.
They get it.
But I love that. And really, when she was crawling back into that dirt pile, she's kind of saying to her mother, do you see me? Do you really mean it? Do you really mean it?
Yeah.
And kids, they've waged war and said, I want
to
go over that line. And I love that she went back and back and back. Many parents say, well, I've tried all that and it doesn't work and it doesn't work and my child is still out of control. What do you say to parents like that?
Usually they're just not doing it well because children are children. Give you another example of it. I was out in the backyard. I was hammering on the fence, and I had a can of nails. And Danae was three, and I was taking care of her that day. And Shirley was shopping or something. And she came over to the nails and picked up the can and looked at it. And I said, Danae, don't dump that out. Yeah. Don't pour that out. And I knew she was going to do it, but I thought it was time to learn a lesson.
She's the star of one of your books, too.
She is.
Yes, she is.
So in a few minutes, she poured it out on the grass, and then the nails got all mixed up with the grass. And so I said, Danae, I told you not to do that, and so I want you to come with me. And went into the house. I opened the window. I pulled a chair right up there where she could watch me. I put her in the chair, and I say, well, when you are ready to pick up the nails and put them in the can, you let me know. And she cried, you know, and she wanted to come out. And I said, when you're ready to pick up the nails. And finally she said, okay, Daddy. And she came out, and together we picked up the nails. You look for those little opportunities to say, I'm not mean. I'm not mad at you. I'm not threatening you. I just want you to learn to obey me and to do what I tell you to do. They'll get that.
They'll get it. I'm the leader. I'm not your coach.
Yeah.
I'm the leader, and you must follow me.
And the leader loves you more than you can possibly understand. And after a confrontation like that, the child will want to be reassured, and you open your arms and you let them come.
Interestingly, what I have found is that when children grow up with a strong parent, a strong father, a strong mother, as the child matures into adulthood, they end up actually being closer to that parent because they trust that parent and they know that that parent loves them enough to do the hard work for them. And I wonder sometimes as I'm talking, I'm hearing a lot of mothers or fathers listening to this saying, yeah, 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 but I've done that and it just doesn't seem to work. I loved what you said early on, that healthy discipline begins in our mind, that we must believe we're the leader, we're the boss.
Right.
And we must constantly embrace the authority that God has given us, not for bad, but for good, to help our children and come back to that. But really, you're talking about a process that requires a lot of energy and some mental fortitude.
Exactly. But it leads to peacefulness.
Yes.
When you do this, guess what your neighbors and friends feel about your child? They want to have them over, right?
Yes.
And if you don't, they don't want you to bring them because there's a tyranny in this. A child can tyrannize adults.
Little kids can too. Very little ones. That's right. Yeah, yeah. They absolutely can. Well, what an amazing discussion this has been.
Well, I've loved talking to you. We're out of time again.
Yes, we are. And I thank you so much for sharing your heart, for sharing your life, for sharing your stories, your wisdom. I hope that it blesses our audience the way it's blessing me.
Well, I am so glad that we took 2 days to explore the fundamentals of child discipline here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. You know, I hear this stuff every day, and yet I still took away a lot for how I can more intentionally raise children who become great adults. We've been listening to the conclusion of a conversation between my dad, Dr. James Dobson, and Dr. Meg Meeker. I'm Ryan Dobson, and before we go today, I want to remind you to take advantage of an opportunity we have going on at Family Talk right now. Through the end of this month, every single donation we receive, we'll send you my dad's book, Love for a Lifetime, and the DVD that corresponds with it from our brand new Building a Family Legacy film series. Donate online at drjamesdobson.org or call us at 877-732-6825. Coming up next time, don't miss the beginning of a three-part series you don't want to miss. It's about dealing with the strong-willed child. This is Ryan Dobson saying God bless, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.